political deanship. Iowa senior Democrat, Senator Tom Harkin, leads and mentors. A conversation with Senator Harkin on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation,
Iowa Bankers Association. Iowa banks provide financial services to meet the needs of families, farms, and businesses. More information is available online at myiowabank.com. Iowa banks, your future, our focus.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you policymakers and decision makers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, December 2 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Senator Tom Harkin's name is on at least two of the nation's landmark laws, or at least one, and probably another very soon. He's credited already with leading the Americans with Disabilities Act, providing accommodations to those people needing those considerations to be productive Americans. And currently, chairing the Senate's subcommittee funding education, Senator Harkin is leading the reauthorization of the education law known as No Child Left Behind, modifying the law to fit what's been learned since the law was first enacted during the George W. Bush administration. Within the past month, Senator Harkin turned 72 years old. He's been around Congress since 1969, serving first on Congressman Neil Smith's staff, elected to the House of Representatives in 1974, serving 10 years in the House, representing Southwest Iowa, before moving to the U.S. Senate in 1984. Senator Harkin, welcome back to Iowa Press.
Always good to be back.
You've been on the program several times and since you were first elected as a representative. Mm-hmm. Nice to have you back.
It's nice to be back.
Thank you. And across the Iowa Press table, two familiar faces, Associated Press senior political writer Mike Glover and Radio Iowa News director Kay Henderson.
Senator, let's turn to some things that appear to be moving towards fruition in Congress. There appears to be a compromise in the works on an extension of payroll tax, and there appears to be a compromise in the works on the extension of unemployment benefits. What's happened to drive these compromises after months of political partisan bickering?
Well, Mike, I think people have come to the realization that with the high rate of unemployment that we still have, that this would be the worst time to cut off unemployment benefits for people. Mm-hmm. As we've just noticed this week, the unemployment figures are coming down. We're getting some more jobs. Mm-hmm. There's some job growth. It's slow, but it's moving in the right direction. And so now's not the time to pull the plug on that. And secondly, we instituted the payroll tax benefit cut in payroll tax last year at 2%. And again, now is not the time to increase taxes on hardworking Americans by, about $1,500 a year. So I think there's a realization that we have to do these before we go home for Christmas.
And how do you contrast that with the failure of the supercommittee, which in seeking some kind of a debt reduction compromise came to an absolute gridlock? Why do we have gridlock there and suddenly consensus here?
Well, I think the supercommittee was looking at something going out 10 years.
Right.
Obviously, this we're just looking at next year, mm-hmm. when you're talking about unemployment insurance and the payroll tax deduction, mm-hmm. that's just for next year. A lot easier to do that than it is to do something for 10 years out. So that's how I contrast it. There was much more at stake in the super committee in terms of the amount of money involved, and quite frankly, I think that the reason the super committee did not come to any agreement was, if I can be frank about it, it's that the Democrats put spending cuts on the line where we wanted it. We were willing to cut spending, but the Republicans simply would not budge on revenues over a longer period of time, and that was the gridlock, and that just broke it apart.
Is the country better off because they couldn't come to an agreement?
Well, let me rephrase that. It wasn't Armageddon because they didn't reach an agreement. The country didn't fall. The sky didn't come down. And I think now we're confronted with the sequestration, but that doesn't go into effect until January of 2013. And quite frankly, I think next year the electorate now gets to tell us what they'd like us to do. Mm-hmm. I think this is good. Wouldn't you like to see a presidential campaign based on issues rather than just personalities and things like that? So here's the issue. We have the Bush tax cuts expiring at the end of next year. We have this cut in defense spending and cut in domestic spending by huge amounts mm-hmm. in January of 2013. So what are we going to do? Do we continue on with the Bush tax cuts? Or do we raise some revenues mm-hmm. by closing some of the loopholes, by raising revenues from those who are in the upper incomes, and then have some spending cuts? Or are we all just going to have all spending cuts and not raise any more revenues? I think this is a clear-cut choice for the electorate to decide next year.
Some of the choices that have been on the table in regards to the payroll tax extension, which you've been discussing previously, have been tax increases and how to make adjustments to, in the words of Washington, pay for it. In other words, extend this tax break to people and come up with corresponding cuts in federal spending. How is this package going to come together? Will there indeed be some other components just beyond extending the payroll tax cut?
We are looking at offsets, and that's what's under discussion right now. It's clear that the offer by the Republicans just this past week, to cut 200,000 people off of the federal payroll is not going to fly. I mean, here we're just making slow growth and getting employment back up. They want to cut 200,000 people out right now? That's not a good offset. That's not going to work. There are other offsets that we can look at. And there are spending cuts that we can make that won't be devastating, that can fill in for the unemployment insurance and also for the payroll tax cut.
There are some Iowa officials, Congressman Braley, Governor Branstad, people of two different parties who would like to see other components added to that package, in specifically the wind energy tax credit, which is set to expire at the end of 2012.
Right.
They would like that included now to give some consistency to the industry and some ability of people to make an investment.
Some of those might be included in this year-end package that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, by the way. There's nothing like Christmas to focus Congress's attention on getting something done. Remind you that the health care bill passed on Christmas Eve. Like I say, Christmas always focuses our attention. Some of that might be included, Kay, but I think that most of these, they call them tax extenders, wind energy tax credits and all kinds of things like that, the ethanol tax credit, all those things are going to be in a package next year. That's why I say next year we're going to have some serious debates in congressional races, presidential race, about which way we're going to go on the Bush tax cuts, the very things you're talking about. Are we going to extend the wind energy tax credit, things like that, clean energy tax credits? Or we're going to let those fall. That's all in a package that I think Congress will be, mark my word, Congress will be working on this after the election next year.
I want to take you back to what you said earlier about the unemployment report that came out on Friday, mm-hmm. Down to 8.6%. And mm-hmm. you said, moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is moving down, but it wasn't as big a drop as had been anticipated. And also, that dropped because the workforce contracted. People just gave up looking for work.
Yes.
So those two things. So is it really good news?
Well, it's better news, okay? Things are getting better. Are we out of the woods yet? I don't think so, Dean. We still have too many people unemployed. But the trend is in the right direction. I mean, at least we're not shedding jobs. We're getting some. You're right about the long-term unemployment. There are a lot of people out there not counted in that 8.6% because they've just given up looking for work. So we know that the 8.6% is really higher than that. Quite frankly, I think the realistic unemployment figures are probably around double that, pretty close to 16%. Nonetheless, the employment figures, people coming back to work, are moving in the right direction. Slowly, more slowly than we'd hope, but the European thing is also impinging on us right now. What's happening in Europe is impinging on us right now. So we're not out of the woods yet.
As we bring people back also from Afghanistan and Iraq, mm-hmm. those people need jobs also. That's going to increase the workforce out of work.
Exactly right. And that's why, looking ahead, I have argued for a balanced approach. We need to raise revenues, and we have places to go for revenues. The IRS said that in 2007, the top one-tenth of 1%, the top one-tenth of 1% income earners in America, people who make over $2 million a year, took home $1 trillion in 1 year. Now, don't tell me they can't afford to pay a little bit more into the coffers. Taking some of those revenues and put it into infrastructure or doing things like energy tax credits so that we're building more wind energy systems or credits to businesses, which President Obama, by the way, just this last week also came out with for more energy efficient buildings, for insulating buildings, putting in new doors and new windows. It's the cheapest barrel of oil is still the barrel of oil you don't use. And we can put a lot of people to work in this country just modernizing old buildings and making them more energy efficient.
One of the things your committee is working on is an overhaul of the education law known as No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. Is it inevitable that a revision of No Child Left Behind will win congressional approval, and what will it look like? What's the biggest change you're going to make?
Well, yes, we're going to change No Child Left Behind because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
The bill that I have gotten reported out, and it's a bipartisan bill. I got it through our committee. It took me 2 years, but mm-hmm. I got it done. We got a bipartisan bill. Now the House has got to act, and we aren't going to do anything until the House does something so that we can get together with the House. But No Child Left Behind, the fault of No Child Left Behind is we tried to do too much with too little.
Mm-hmm.
And it was punitive in nature. So we've done away with No Child Left Behind in our bill. We focused our federal monies on the bottom 5% of the lowest performing schools, plus the 5% of the schools that have the highest achievement gaps, and the 12% of the schools that account for 50% of the dropouts in secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking the federal government, focusing it more narrowly, building a new partnership with the states for accountability on the states. We put incentives, not punitive, but we put in incentives for states to have teacher and principal evaluation systems.
Mm-hmm.
And the good things that were in No Child Left Behind, we enhanced. And the good things about No Child Left Behind was the documentation, the data, knowing what was happening to kids with disabilities, knowing what was happening mm-hmm. to kids with English language learning skills, knowing what was happening to poor kids, making sure we had the data so we know what was happening to them. We've kept that in there and made it stronger so that parents now know what's happening to their children in school.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, when you pass legislation, will it be legislation that people will notice? Will it make a difference in people's lives?
Oh, I believe so. Absolutely.
How so?
Well, first of all, we've got provisions in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act that will enhance teacher training, mm-hmm. principal training, accountability. Certain schools now are going to get more money. We're going to focus on those lowest 5% schools. We're working with the states on accountability, but also on closing a loophole in the law that allows some of the wealthier schools to actually get more money than poorer schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a loophole. We've closed that loophole. So, yes, I think as soon as this law passes and the president signs it, I think within a year you're going to see some real changes in where federal money's going and what it's going for in elementary and secondary education. No longer are we going to have these annual, yearly progress reports that if you don't make it,
mm-hmm.
you get slapped on the wrist, you get money taken away from you. That's not going to happen anymore.
Folks in America's farm community thought they might see the outlines of the farm bill emerge from that super committee. What's going to happen in regards to farm subsidies in the coming year as the farm bill needs to be written? And in particular, the large component of that bill that involves feeding programs, nutrition, food stamps.
Well, as far as the nutrition programs go, I mean, as you know, we've had an increase in use of free and reduced meals, even here in Iowa,
right.
true nationwide, simply because, as we talked, Nina, people are out of work. Or if they're not out of work, they're taking lower-paid jobs, and therefore they're qualifying for reduced price or free lunches, free meals. So that we have to protect. I did, too. I thought maybe our Ag Committee, I'm no longer chair, but I'm obviously still on it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were going to have the outlines of a bill coming out of the super committee. That didn't happen. But I believe we agreed, Republicans and Democrats agreed on the Senate Agriculture Committee to a set of proposals that I believe now we can move forward with as an ag bill rather than just part of the super committee. And it includes some changes. The direct payment program is going, thank goodness. And we're going to focus more on crop insurance, on a new acre program that we have for support. And I'm pleased to report that our conservation programs held. We're not going to cut our conservation programs. And we're going to continue the fresh fruit and vegetable program for our schools, too.
Part of the news in Iowa throughout this year has been flooding along the Missouri River. It was an enormous story and caused enormous damage. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with the response of the Army Corps of Engineers to that flood disaster?
Well, Mike, I'm satisfied that the Corps of Engineers followed their master manual. They did.
That's a different answer.
Well, I know. They followed the master manual. They did everything that they should, but they did not anticipate a flood that was bigger than anything in history.
Right.
Bigger than anything that had ever happened. So as we've looked at the master manual, and I've had my staff look at it, it's clear that it needs to be updated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm trying to push the Army Corps now to get in, redo that master manual, and also reduce the level of the in the reservoirs upstream.
Mm-hmm.
Get their level down more than what they have in the past. Being careful, however, that we need electric generation.
Right.
We can't reduce it so far that we cut out electric generation and increase electricity costs for people in western Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, navigation. We need navigation on that river, too. So those things all have to be taken into account. But I do believe the Corps could reduce the level of the reservoirs appreciably this next spring.
Could this flood have been prevented by doing that? Had they kept the reservoir levels lower, would it have prevented much of the damage?
Oh, sure, if you had a crystal ball and could see in the future. I mean, if the year
Well, aren't people like the Corps of Engineers supposed to be able to anticipate this kind of stuff?
Well, if it had been a relatively normal year, uh-huh. or even a flood year within the confines of the floods of the last 50 or 60 years, mm-hmm. they would have been okay. But this was beyond that.
Well, they didn't have enough discretion. They were going by the book then. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. They just did not anticipate a flood and the lateness of those rains that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, that, and in my limited knowledge of this, by the way, I'm not an expert in this area, but from looking at the master manual and looking at climate patterns, I've had a number of meetings with the Corps of Engineers about this. It's clear that over the last 20-some years, things have changed. We're getting more flooding. Also, I would submit this, Dean, that over the last 30 years or so, we have more intense cropping in the upstream areas than we ever had before. We had grasslands up there. We had pasture lands. Well, because of the warming climates we're getting and new strains of corn, new hybrids, we're getting corn and beans and row crops.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that water is running off faster
yeah.
than it ever did in the past.
Kate?
This past week, Governor Branstad accepted a $7 million grant from the federal government to set up one of these state-level insurance exchanges. That's part of the health care reform law.
Right.
He's also part of a lawsuit that's seeking to declare that law unconstitutional. Are you concerned that these insurance exchanges being established in all 50 states may not actually come to pass because of the uncertainty with the law until the Supreme Court rules?
Well, as the chair of the Health Committee, I'm pleased that the state of Iowa, as I understand it, is moving ahead with that money to go ahead and set up the outlines of the exchanges. That's my understanding anyway,
and I'm
very encouraged by that. I still believe the Supreme Court will rule in favor of the exchanges and that provision, the mandate that you have to have coverage. I believe that will hold. And so I think we would be remiss if we didn't start setting up those exchanges. So I'm glad to see that Iowa is moving ahead in that direction.
Who do you think is going to be the Republican nominee? It looks like the Democrats are thinking it's going to be George Romney. Do you?
Well, I don't know. If I knew that.
Well, none of us do. But
if I knew that, I'd probably go to Las Vegas tomorrow or something. Dean.
Well,
I don't
Senator,
know.
You had some interesting yes. things to say about the perceived frontrunner right now, Newt Gingrich. You said he would be a heaven-sent nominee.
Did I say that?
You did.
Oh, I did say that. Well,
why did you say that?
Well, I said, look, I've known Newt Gingrich since he came to the House of Representatives. I remember him from my term in the House, he's just very undisciplined. And as I can tell you from firsthand experience, you have to be disciplined when you run for president. And perhaps I wasn't so disciplined when I ran.
Do you think he's going to be the nominee, or do you think it's going to be George Romney or somebody else?
Gee, I don't know. I mean, look, whoever...
Are the Democrats wise, then, in running commercials now on George Romney's record?
Oh, Mitt Romney. I don't know that they are. I didn't know they were running. There were some Democrats running.
George is his father.
Father George Romney, right. That dates
well,
us, I think.
As if.
But here's what I think. I think if the Republicans are really smart, they'd run John Huntsman. That's not going to happen. What I think is going to happen is that they will get a nominee. I don't know whether it's going to be Newt or Mitt Romney. It doesn't look like Herman Cain's going to make it now. It could be one of those two. But I believe that Barack Obama, running on two things, his record, the fact that he's, when he came in, we were shedding 700,000 jobs a month. We're now adding jobs every month. We passed the Fair Pay Act for women that we could never pass before. We put new controls on credit card industry. He saved the auto industry in America. I mean, the health care bill. I mean, I know there's a lot of contention on it, but believe me, it's working now for a lot of elderly people in America. And then compare Barack Obama, what he wants to do for the future, compared to what the Republicans want. Everything I hear from the Republicans is, we want to go back to doing what got us into this mess right. in the first place.
So you're pretty optimistic about Obama's re-election chances.
I'm very optimistic. As Joe Biden once said, don't compare him to the Almighty, compare him to the alternative.
What impact has the Occupy Wall Street movement had on the debate in Washington? And do you think they're a boon or a hindrance to Democrats in 2012?
Well, I think these Occupy movements have been good. They're exercising their constitutional rights. And I think they've given a lot of voice to the other 99% who aren't coming out and doing things, that aren't demonstrating. I think it's focused a lot of public attention. I just hope now that they will transform that into more positive actions. I've heard some rumors that they might do Occupy the caucuses and things like
right.
that. That would be wrong. If they really want to make changes, they should now take their energies out and get people to come to the caucuses. That's what they should be doing, help get people out to the Iowa caucuses.
Senator, we have way too many questions and way too little time. I'd like to go to something you said the last time you were out here. You said the political mood was so sour for Democrats you were glad you weren't on the ballot. Is the political mood this time sour for Democrats, or is the political mood improving for Democrats?
I think the political mood is improving for Democrats. I think, again, here's as I see it. In 2010, the pendulum swung all one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now people are looking at what the Republicans have been doing in the House of Representatives, the policies they put forward, that they just won't even meet President Obama halfway, that they're very uncompromising, and that's the spirit of politics and government is compromising. So I think the pendulum's coming back. And I think this election next time is going to be a lot different than it was 2 years ago.
If that's the case, why do folks like Barney Frank, the Massachusetts congressman, say, I'm just not going to run for re-election?
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for Barney Frank. I just read what I read about him, and evidently his district got changed, and he might have faced a primary opponent that might have been tough for him. I don't know. Whether there's other reasons or not, I don't know.
It wouldn't be an official Iowa press show if we didn't ask a little speculation going forward. You're up in a couple of years. You're 72. What's your future? Are you planning on running for another term?
I knew you were going to ask that question.
Good.
So, I thought about it and I said, you know, I have not decided what I'm going to do in 2020 yet.
But, so that means 2014 is your running again.
Well, look, I feel good. God's been good to me in terms of my health. I feel very good. Contrary to what my political opponents say, I think my mental faculties are still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I love my job. I like my work. I think there's a lot of challenges confronting us. I love my committee work on education and health.
So you're running.
Hmm?
You're running.
I beg your pardon.
You're running.
Look, that's to be determined some other time. Okay,
well,
some other time.
And we'll ask you back soon. We're out of time right now.
All right, thanks, Dean.
Thanks so much. On our next edition of Iowa Press, we'll be talking with Iowa State University President Greg Joffre, getting his perspective on a decade-long tenure at the helm in Ames. Outgoing ISU President Greg Joffre at the usual Iowa Press airtime, 7:30 Friday night and 11:30 Sunday morning. And before we go, we want to pause and reflect on the passing of a dear friend and colleague here at Iowa Public Television.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation,
Iowa Bankers Association. Iowa banks provide financial services to meet the needs of families, farms, and businesses. More information is available online at myiowabank.com. Iowa Banks, your future, our focus.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org.